Roger Alexander back here from Mid-America Nazarene University, who has far more planned giving experience than I do. So I only have 12 years. He's got how many years, Roger? A career? Lifetime?
41.
So in the planned giving world, that means I've only made 12 years. I've only learned from 12 years of mistakes. He's learned from 41 years of mistakes.
Because
when you make a mistake, it really, really gets implanted in you. That's true. Things do change. We do a pretty good job of keeping up with the current law and so forth. So from the foundation standpoint, I told you earlier that we were 19 years old. The founding executive vice president, which was the operations guy, was an attorney named Ken Roney. And he was executive vice president for 8 years running the foundation. And then for 10 years, he was president. And he was in the bar of Colorado, Kansas, and Florida. And I worked with him for 10 of those years as his executive vice president. So now we have him on retainer, but this is my first year of presidency, and the first year we don't have an attorney on staff with us. But we have a lot of access to attorneys, pretty good ones, and Ken, who's got the institutional knowledge of the foundation since he wrote the incorporating papers, still on the phone with him all the time, and lots of good connectivity there.
Are the employees under the Church of the Nazarene General Church umbrella?
Somewhat. So the Church of the Nazarene Foundation is a separate corporation. We have separate bylaws, separate board, separate everything really, except every nonprofit has to have a membership. Our membership is one. We have one member, and that's the general board of the Church of the Nazarene. So we would be called a supporting agency or a fully owned subsidiary of the denomination. So while we operate independently to keep some liability separate, we are actually owned by the denomination. We rent space in the Global Ministry Center now. We used to be down on Merlin and Olathe, but that's who we are.
And what purpose is to help Nazarenes do what Nazarenes
So a supporting agency is an interesting kind of a nonprofit because we're a nonprofit without a charitable mission. So, you know, you can go to Compassionate Ministries and they'll say, oh, we help people, and you can go to the homeless shelter, we help homeless people. All of these things, but our charitable mission is limited to helping other nonprofits raise money. So we are a supporting agency of the denomination, and that's one of the reasons we don't ask for offerings for ourselves. We help people ask for offerings for themselves. We're entirely fee-based, so when there's endowments, charitable trust, gift annuities, donor-advised funds, investment management accounts for the churches, and various kinds of, few other kinds of pooled income there. When it's under management, we have a management fee to invest those, and there's about $140 million under management right now, so our fees come off of that. For the charitable trusts, we also do the tax returns on the trusts and various things, so it's fee-oriented, but it's not fee-oriented to the church or at the beginning or end of a gift. We talked about the wills a lot in the last workshop. On the wills, if we handle everything at the end, we charge 1% to handle all the work, which is really a pretty good deal. If you've been through the process of working with attorneys and back and forth, and how's this, and sign this paper, and get this notarized, and so forth, we tend to help the local church a lot by getting those things done for that 1%. 1%. In this one, we're going to see how to achieve some of our objectives through the untapped resource of non-cash giving. So one of my favorite statements is that we want to help bless their families as much as possible, bless their church as much as possible, bless the government as little as possible in death. And it's not because we don't like America, it's because we believe we pay enough taxes, and there's no reason that we need to pay more taxes. And often, when there's a charitable component to an estate, the government gets less and the church gets more. Occasionally, it can actually work out. You can make this work out so the family actually gets more because of a charitable gift. When the government goes down, it's not necessarily the charity that's getting more. It can be the family that's actually getting a little more in the process, which is not a bad thing whatsoever. And I do believe I just read you my next slide. That was it, right there. So gifts of of things have a little different position in the Bible. There's, if you read the Old Testament especially, worship was the offering. The significant part, they sang songs as they were climbing the hill to the temple. So there was worshipful things, there was purposeful energy going into, let's bless God, let's go to God, let's go to God's house. But a lot of that whole experience was the offering. Let's take this thing to God. So now we've had offerings as a big part of the worship service. I'm a little worried about what's happening to the culture, especially post-COVID, because a lot of churches no longer pass that dirty offering plate with all that change, or, you know, all those germs on it. So we've gotten away. A lot of churches have gotten away from that. They have got online stuff or boxes at the back of the church. Stop by if you want to make a deposit into the little box in the back of the church. And I personally think that takes a little bit away from the worshipful aspect of what's happening when you give. I was a pastor from 1986 to 2008. And one of my practices was to make sure that I have an envelope in my hand when the offering plate goes by and put it in. You know, you're not supposed to draw attention to your giving, but the congregation needs to know that the pastor has also got skin in this game. And so I always made sure the ushers came by and hit everybody in the platform and so forth, and this happened. I wanted my kids to see me giving, and I wanted that to be a part of the spiritual act of worship. When I started doing my tithe online, which is just so easy, I started putting an empty envelope in and says, I gave online, just wanted you to know. So, you know, put it in, the counters will see that the pastor's not giving, but because it comes in a different way. But this whole aspect of giving something to God can have a little different spiritual effect than just giving some cash. So I started the last session with a fun story. I have a pretty fun one that came to me. When a family called me and said, we want to talk to you about a special gift. Okay, that's fine. We can do that. I'm going to be in your state in a few weeks. We'll set this whole thing up. So I went to meet these people I'd never met before. And it was, they were deeply moved by God's Spirit. They said, the Lord has told us to do something, and so this is out of obedience. We're supposed to give something away, and we believe this is to go to missions. We don't know if it's missions in Africa, in Asia, in South America. We have no idea. But somewhere there's a project, and God needs some funding, so here it is. And they slid a paper bag across the table, kitchen table to me as we were talking. So I opened it up, and it's full of gold. It's full of gold bullion. And so as I collected their story and started learning what's going on, there was tens of thousands of dollars worth of gold in the bag. And the family could have probably written a check. But God didn't say write a check. God said give this thing that you own. And I kind of got the opinion that it had been in the family for a lot of years, and that that's the kind of thing that when the grandkids come, they said, hey, can we get the gold coins out and play with them, you know? There was something different about giving the thing that had meaningful heart stuff to them. You can get that if somebody's given away a farm that's been in the family for years, or something that somebody has invested a lot of their life in to own this thing. And it can be very spiritually developmental in a church for somebody to give that kind of thing away. Well, in this case, the gold, I came back to Kansas City with it. That was the day that I learned if you get on an airplane with tens of thousands of dollars in your backpack in gold, that the TSA would like to know what the metal is that's in your backpack that we can't x-ray through. And so they had a few questions about why I was carrying all this gold on the airplane, but I got back to Kansas City safely, and when I went to Global Mission, they said, we know exactly the project. It's just this size. This is exactly what we needed. And it was a very meaningful event. But charitable contributions can happen in so many different ways. They can be a gift of cash or property. For the church's sake, they're going to issue a receipt that's different than a receipt for cash. And it's not deductible at the same level. So typically, now they've upped it to 60%. You can, say, make $100,000, you can deduct $60,000 in charitable deductions. If it's cash, if it's non-cash, it's limited to $30,000. If it's some non-cash and some cash, then you have to go to this little worksheet on your 1040 and put it out there and figure out where your percentage is. But it's only cash or gift of property in the year that it's claimed. If you exceed those limits, more than 30% non-cash, more than 60%, you can carry forward for up to 5 years. You can't do so selectively. You can take it. You have to take it if you can in the next year, and the next year, and the next year. But that is important, because if somebody's really counting on a charitable deduction, you give $100,000 away, you made $100,000, you give a $100,000 piece of real estate away, you're not getting a $100,000 deduction. So so you will be still paying taxes in that year. We had a phone call on December 26th one time. I'm kind of proud of this event. A man called and said, I want to give a farm away, 100 and some acres. I said, okay, that's great. I want to do it this year. That's wonderful. He said, well, I don't really need all the tax deduction, but my kids do, so I want to give a fourth of it to my daughter and a fourth of it to my son. We want to all give it away by December 31st. That's 5 days from now. We started whipping deeds out, and we got it done. We got the whole thing done. It went to their kids, and then it all went to us. Everybody got a charitable receipt. It was kind of cool. This charitable gift has to be unconditional and without personal benefit. Now, we've talked earlier about the charitable gifts that come in through trusts. So a charitable trust, a unit trust, and so forth can do that. But for right now, the receipting has to be completely given away and has to be used to or for the use of a charity within the allowable limits. That's at 30% or 60%, and properly substantiated. So the properly substantiated is a big deal when it comes to non-cash gifts. Because the government started cracking down on people that were bringing in their 20-year-old junker Cadillacs and deducting $25,000 for that donation. So they have a whole lot of rules now about what you can donate and how that can be substantiated. And the rules change at various levels. So the rules change at $75, and there's 500 in there, I believe. But the big one happens at $5,000. If you give something away that's worth more than $5,000, that is non-cash and isn't just stock or anything that has a readily available marketable value, then you have to have a qualified appraiser. And the nonprofit cannot do the appraising, nor can the nonprofit hire the appraiser. It's the donor's responsibility to hire an appraiser and get that done. And then you have to, in addition to hiring that appraiser, make sure that that's an appraiser that's willing to sign your 1040, because they will be signing your 1040 as a qualified appraiser, as will the nonprofit. So there's a form called 8283. Tax form 8283 is the one that that's going to go on your tax return, and it's going to have the appraiser's signature, and it's going to have the nonprofit's signature on it. That's a pretty big deal. That's a little more than just writing somebody a check for $5,000 and getting that substantiated. The other thing you need to know about the substantiation is that the church is going to have to, in this case, it would be the foundation. And there's a lot of justification for using the Church of the Nazarene Foundation instead of the local church on this, because there's a lot of ways to get off the straight and narrow path of righteousness on this. Okay, so you might need the foundation to do it. But if the church or the foundation in this case uses it, let's say you give a car away or something, uses it as it is, and owns it for more than 36 months, then there's no reporting back to the IRS. If the nonprofit liquidates your non-cash gift within 36 months, that nonprofit has to inform the IRS of the sale value. They would not typically come back and say, hey, you gave a $10,000 car, but the nonprofit could only get $9,000 out of it. But if there's a great disparity on there, there's a chance that that kicks out an audit from the IRS some way, and they come back and say, wait, what's going on here? You deducted $100,000 for this thing, and the nonprofit could only get $20,000 out of it. Something's not right here. So this probably was a little more of an issue back when they had more auditors. Nowadays, who knows why they choose and how they choose. A lot of audits just come out of the computer system that make it happen. But we do our best to make sure that we try to keep our donors out of trouble. And one of them is walking with them through the substantiation process to make sure there's lots of evidence that the right gift happened and in the right way. Any questions about that?
If you receive something that's a consumable non-cash gift?
So yeah, you can eat it. Yeah.
Eat it, or you have to, you also, or if it, you take that car and you put it in the church's garage and the garage burns down, if it's destroyed or consumed as well within that 36-month period, but usually it's, you know, sold and,
yeah,
and you receive the benefit for
but
a couple other little
but those nuances
are what the foundation will help you walk through.
If the nonprofit uses it for the youth pastor or something, the car, then it is being consumed, and then you don't have to do that. So you can donate just about anything that's valuable other than, what did I mention before? I didn't mention timeshares and funeral plots. Those are not fun. A timeshare is almost impossible to give away. Funeral plots, I will take them in certain circumstances. I just make all the accountants unhappy at work when I do.
one of the solutions, though, that I've learned over the years is the Salvation Army is willing to take those funeral plots, and they use those for indigent people.
Yeah.
And so they're consider the Salvation Army when it comes to funeral plots. Please, yeah. Not the foundation or not Mid-America.
So we had 23 of them here in one place in St. Louis, and we worked with the churches and everything, you know, and nobody wanted them, and the association that runs the funeral or runs the graveyard, they're happy to say, yeah, we'll get those sold for you, but if they sell your funeral plots, grave plots, they don't make anything. If they sell new ones, they make money. So they sell the new ones, you know, and don't do the others. We finally got a funeral home here in the area to buy all 23 of them at once. And then they would sell them at their leisure when they felt like there was a substantial need. Things that are not deductible. If you're a professional painter and you paint your church, you can deduct the cost of paint. You can deduct your mileage back and forth, but you cannot deduct the value of your time. Personal services are not a non-cash donatable thing. Rent for use of the building is the same way. If you own the property right next to the church and you typically rent out parking spaces and you say you guys can park here on Sunday, it's not a charitable deduction, believe it or not. Contributions to an individual are not deductible. We still at the foundation, and I know it happens in local churches all the time, the Brown family is really having a tough time. I want to give them $100. Can you send them $100 out of my donor advised fund? I'm sorry, we can't do that. We can send it to their church. If they have a charitable fund where they're helping poor people, they can certainly do that. But a contribution to an individual is not deductible, even if it goes through the church's hands. Gifts that benefit the donor or donor's family. And having been a pastor, I know how this happens. Somebody wants to go to a Christian college or a Christian high school, and so the parents suddenly decide that they would like to establish a nice scholarship fund at their church so that all their payments to the college or school are now charitable deductions. That doesn't work. It doesn't work that way at all. It can't be designated specifically for that benefit to the family member. You can give your church to your church's scholarship fund. That's a charitable deduction. It just can't be conditioned that your grandkid is the one that's going to get the money. It has to be able to go through a decision-making process at the church of who they want to help in their own ministry. And then a personal gift to the pastor, as fun as those are for pastors, it's not a charitable deduction when it's a personal gift like that. Non-cash gifts can show up in things like, we're going to 2:30, right? Yeah, good. So non-cash gifts, such as appreciated securities, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, save that capital gains tax when you have anything that's worth more than it was when you bought it. And selling it is going to cause you to do capital gains tax. That just works slick with the IRS. When it's given away, you wash out the capital gains tax there. That happens on real estate, too. And real estate, we handle pretty close to a piece of real estate every month. We just sold 214 acres down in Oklahoma, or no, in Collinsworth County, Texas, just this week. And we didn't even own it hardly a month. It was a really nice deal. Easy to process, transfer through, work the way it's supposed to. Did I tell you about the 1% one I did? Didn't I really? Yeah, 1% of an estate. Roger?
What are some of the things with regard to real estate gifts
that
you help?
Yeah. So,
is that something you want to
I think so. So real estate gifts, my advice to local churches is if somebody wants to give you a piece of real estate that you use us, because there's a lot to it. And so before we will accept a gift, we do a couple things. One of them is we pay at our cost the title search, because we don't want to, we would be glad to own your house, but we don't want to own it with 25 other heirs that nobody really knows who they are or what they are. We have actually we've had some pieces of property where the only solution is don't pay the property tax. If you don't pay the property tax, pretty soon the sheriff will take it. You know, it's going to go to a sheriff sale out there, which is a little bit humorous because one of my favorite DSs who knows me well called me with an emergency in the middle of a Valentine's Day banquet. One of his pastors called. There's a piece of real estate that's being foreclosed upon in the name of the Church of the Nazarene Foundation, and it's going to be sold at sheriff sale tomorrow. So he called me in the middle of this banquet, and I said, yeah, David, I know we didn't pay the taxes on it, and we're letting it happen. Which he didn't really understand, but he did say, do you think since we're really good friends, you might have, like, dropped me an email or something that said some property. So we went through a big scare there, but if a piece of title is not clear, you don't want to receive it as a gift without a lot of parameters there. The second thing is some of the toughest people in America are the EPA. So we do a level one EPA evaluation of the real estate. We don't want to take a piece of real estate in that's worth $100,000 if it's going to have $2 million worth of EPA cleanup before it can go anyplace else. So a level one is relatively simple. It's talking to the neighbors, talking to the history, finding the history on it, looking at things and assessing, is there any risk here or not? And you can usually get in pretty good shape on that. So, Roger, were you thinking of anything other than EPA and clear title?
If it glows at night, you probably need to do a phase two study instead of just a phase one.
Yeah, if you get any.
Those types of things are often overlooked by a local congregation. It's a piece of property next to us. The lady passed away, and or she's willing to give it to us now, or give us half of it, We get to pay $50,000 for a $150,000 property. That's a great deal, and we're going to.
Right.
It's like, well, real estate, you just really need to work with the foundation. They, like you said, they do this multiple times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And
sometimes it's actually possible to get a piece of property that's not ever really going to produce any money for anything. Back in the 70s, it was really popular to have vacation developments, like in Arizona and so forth, that are just a spot in the desert. And people paid heavily for them. A spot in the desert, there's no water, there's never going to be any infrastructure, there's not even a dirt road going to it. And so people have those kind of things and sometimes want to give them away. I have one for sale. I know this one well. So if anybody wants 5 acres in Colorado, I get it to you for, name your price, $500 right now. This one actually has a little dirt road going to it. You can put a camper on it. I think the rules say up to 2 weeks a year. So if you want a place to park, you can drive to a river and mountains and so forth. So you could use it as a place to park a camper a little bit. The real problem is we didn't know until we went to sell it that we only owned half of it. So husband and wife owned it together. Typically, it's joint tenancy. This was tenancy in commons, or I have it backwards there. So when she passed away, her estate was long closed. He remarried. He donated us his before he passed away, and it didn't include the other half. And the property, even if we owned it all, we'd be trying to get $1,000 out of it. So it's not worth opening up any probate and anything. That's one of the ones we're not paying tax on right now. I don't know how long it's going to take them because the tax is $16 a year, and we just don't pay that. And someday somebody will take it away from us. But if you want to own it, I'd be happy to sell it to you. You'll never be able to sell it. You'll be able to sell your half, and the other half is just going to go out into limbo and no man's land out there anywhere. So you want to know what you're getting, what you're receiving, and so forth on the real estate. Businesses are a little more difficult because they come in so many different ways. A C-Corp is just really hard to take as a charitable contribution, but we can get it done. The S-Corp is really hard. C-Corp's what you want. The S-Corp will still be done. Right now, our attorney is saying we need to have another nonprofit over on the side just to do the S-Corp things. But even the rules surrounding closely held stock from family businesses and so forth are really difficult. I would say you need us to handle a gift of a business, but you can take a business. You just want to be careful because of a lot of things, but one of them is unrelated business income tax. So the concept here is if there's three grocery stores in town and the church owns one of them, and the church is tax exempt, it's not fair to the other two grocery stores because they have to pay tax. It's unfair business there. And so they have a, what's called unrelated business income tax. The church is not in the grocery business. They should have to pay tax on whatever they're making on the groceries, unless it's a ministry. If they're selling groceries because they have a ministry of employing people and providing groceries, it's a little different. But you want us involved in any of those?
Potentially could make every dollar in the offering plate taxable as well if it's really messed up. And so
yeah, your tax exempt status can be on in question on those things. Yeah. That's another reason the attorney says we need to start a new nonprofit just to handle all the risky stuff. You know,
which American businesses are that S Corp.
Yeah.
The small business has done very well in the United States. And so mm-hmm. there's a lot of wealth tied up and shouldn't be overlooked by churches that people are yeah. transitioning due to retirement or the health or just tired of.
Yeah. So we, one of the, well, I believe we handled probably the largest Nazarene gift ever in history a few years ago, about 3 years ago, where a man was selling an S-Corp. And he did wind up paying taxes on most of it, but he wanted to tithe on the sale of his business, so his tithe all came to the foundation, and it was, this is a big number, everybody ready? $43.6 million was his tithe off the business. So we think that's probably the largest Nazarene gift in history. Yeah. Yeah, not a little gift. That's a big gift. Love those kind of numbers. Pardon me?
What your second line says there?
What's it say?
Read the estate.
Read the estate.
Oh. you know, when you type these things out at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay. I mentally have to go back and repair that one of these days. That and Tick the Canton, Ohio, I had earlier in there. So personal property are things that you just own. So one of our fun ones was a painting by a famous author. Is anybody a famous painter?
Artist.
A famous artist. Anybody know the famous artist Cy Twombly? We didn't either. Cy Twombly was his name. He had one painting sold for $72 million, and we were going to get two of his paintings. Which a lady had owned for her entire life, knew they were valuable, wanted some to go to her local church. So we accepted the gifts, and this was kind of a, I didn't get to be involved in this one because one of my employees did it, although I really wanted to be in it. But he took it to Cowan's Auctions in Cincinnati, where they had all of the Antiques Roadshow people there. All the appraisers on the Antiques Roadshow work at Cowan's there. And they're on the room, and they're working with these people. And we'd called ahead and said, we're going to bring two Cy Twombly paintings. We did. The president of Cy, when we got there, the president of the auction company went out in the room and said, the Nazarene Foundation has arrived with the Cy Twombly paintings. And every appraiser left their person they were working with and gathered around. This is really funny because he's a scribble artist. And one was a scribble, and one was a painting of a barn. So our employee pulled out the painting of the barn, and they all groaned, oh, you know, pulled out the scribble, and they're like, wow, look at this, you know. So so we had it, they had it in their possession for about a year, and they let it float around the art world, but they said, okay, most of his paintings are big. This is only about this big. Most of his paintings are oil on canvas. Yours is crayon on paper. Most of them are signed. He signed on the back. This is in bad condition. It's faded. We don't think we can get more than $6,000 or $8,000 out of it. Well, you know, $6,000 or $8,000 is not bad for crayon on paper. We'll go ahead and put it up for auction. When the hammer came down, it sold to a museum for $67,500. So we feel like the Lord blessed that whole thing. And, you know, I just like to tell people if we can sell a piece of paper with crayon scribbles on it for $67,000, think how we can help you with your non-cash gift. It is possible to take notes receivable and give them. And then, of course, the estate gifts are what we talked about in the first session there with the wills and so forth. Yeah. Yeah, we do collectibles. So retirement savings, the IRAs, 401ks, I think we hit some of that pretty well. But if you're 72, have a required minimum distribution and are paying any taxes whatsoever and giving money to your church, you're paying too much income tax if you're not using the qualified charitable distribution from an IRA. Life insurance gifts are great gifts. You can donate the policy. You can make the church the beneficiary of the policy. And if you donate the policy, your future premium payments can be tax deductible. You should know that if you donate a whole life policy or something like that, that the option exists for the nonprofit, which becomes the owner, to either cash it in or to kind of look you over and see if they can guess how long you're going to live and wait for the payout. So that's entirely the option of the nonprofit or the church in that case. Agricultural product, we handle hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of Herefords, hay, wheat, soybeans, corn, whatever anybody's raising out there. And it is a genuine benefit for a farmer to avoid income tax by donating the grain and having the charitable deduction.
We have a farmer in our church, and I know that he has given some crops to the church. I don't know how it all transacts.
Yeah.
I know that he's told me he's given crops.
It's the easiest thing in the world. You don't even, your church doesn't even have to have a big dump truck or anything, you know?
Right, we don't.
So,
when they take
a load of corn, 1,000 bushels on a semi of corn going to the market be worth $6,000, they just show up and they say, this corn belongs to the Church of the Nazarene.
Yeah.
It's as easy as that. And so then you acknowledge the gift, and the church has to then be the one to sell it. They just can't get the money in their hands and say they gave it away earlier. So collections are good.
So you need to do an 8283 on that?
We do. Yeah, we do the 80.
It's in excess of $5,000.
Yeah, but it also has the marketable price. It goes into that section where the stocks go on the form, because you know what price is on that day.
Yeah.
So collections, these were extra fun for me because when I was 18 years old, I became an auctioneer. And so I'm one of the people that stand in front of people and say things like, hey, what about my 40, been 40, what about now, 5, what about 5, and a 50, what about 50? So I love selling people stuff. But we do take collections every once in a while. I had an interesting phone call one time from a guy who said he had a coin collection he wanted to donate, and he was in a different state. And I was trying to figure out, you know, what to do and so forth. And I said, well, tell me about your coin collection. He said, well, an older gentleman, he said, I don't like to say anything like that on the telephone. You never know who's listening. I said, okay, well, I'm a pretty good-sized guy. Could I pick your coin collection up all at once by myself? And he goes, oh, no, it'd be way too heavy for that. And he was right. It was heavier than that. So I went to visit him and got there and picked up the coin collection and came back. So the gold bullion, silver bullion we sell. Other things, it's up to the nonprofit to sell it once you've given it. But we do pretty well on these sometimes. The hardest thing, first day in auction school, they said, hardest thing you'll have is to tell people their stuff's not worth what they think it's worth. I had a donor a couple years ago, staff really didn't like this one, who had a flag from every state capitol and one from the U.S. Capitol. All that flew on the 4th of July in 1976, so the 200-year centennial. It had like a letter from George McGovern, and every one of these had a letter with it, and poles, and the whole display, and everything. And he wanted to give it. It's not worth very much, but he had an appraisal. He had a qualified appraisal for $196,000. And I said, so that's an insurance appraisal. That's what it would take to put this back together. There's no way it's worth that, but he wanted to give it, and so we took it and so forth. But telling people that, you know, this is close to you, we're going to sell it for what we can get out of it. It's going to be marketable sale, and it's probably going to be less than you think it's worth. As a pastor or as the foundation president, I would want to be very, very honest with people on those things. The tractors is on there. For any kind of equipment that's been fully depreciated out, if a farmer sells his old tractor, it's ordinary income, because if he's deducted it all the way out. So gifting a tractor can be very very good for that sort of a thing.
The foundation can't control what people claim on their income tax deduction. Whenever they sign the 8283, There's some claim that it's $5,000 or more. The signature of the foundation only says that on this date, I received this item.
Yeah.
It's the appraiser right. that's responsible for it. And so if somebody says, somebody's appraiser says it's worth $30,000, and Mark and his team make every good faith effort to sell it, and they sell it within that 3-year window, and it sells for $11,000, their taxes will be adjusted down, their deduction will be adjusted down to $11,000. So those yeah. are hard conversations, but Mark and his team are ready to have those with people.
Well,
and
you should know that I lucked out on the flags. The donor passed away.
So
we haven't sold them yet.
3 years
away. So, yeah. Really, for everybody involved, that was the best solution for the charitable deduction there. So, but it wasn't the best for him. It was the best for everybody involved in the gift. So, gifts that don't work well, government savings bonds. If it's a savings bond, even if it's gifted, the donor or the donor's estate owes the tax on that. Timeshares, awful. Distressed properties. You don't want to buy a property that's got some reason that you can't make any money on. The only reason to accept a charitable gift is to have extra money. Grave plots. I really only do the grave plots when I'm trying to cultivate a donor for some other reason. It's like doing the donor a favor. Everything that wouldn't sell for a quarter at a yard sale is bad. And then debt property is tough. Yes?
Are there any Dave Ramsey curriculums that go in the details about some of these things?
So Dave Ramsey's got a lot of great concepts and so forth, but I don't know that he's big on this part of gifting. Yeah, I don't know that he has any material that would match this. There's a lot of material out there, it is kind of lesser known in the world. That's one of the reasons I'm out doing workshops on it.
He
you know,
does not make any reference to investments other than you should invest.
Yeah.
Right. There's no investment
strategy.
Yeah.
Strategy or anything like that. Just that you
yeah.
should invest. And as far as gifting, he just says, you know, give as much as you can
mm-hmm.
to your church. He doesn't
right.
really go into detail on.
Yeah, I've never heard him talk about receding or the value of one kind of gift over another one.
All I know is that guy can turn accounting into a ministry. Well, I think it's self-explanatory that there's a connection with this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just not his field. It's not what he's doing when he's trying to encourage people to climb out of debt and so forth.
Yeah,
you know,
his is piled up.
Yeah,
and hasn't really focused on the whys and or the hows and the governmental requirements needed to distribute those piles that
right.
pile up.
So the debt property there, this came up in 08, 09 when everybody was underwater on their houses. Well, let's just give it away. You can't really do that with a nonprofit. It's not going to work very well. First of all, no nonprofit wants to receive a piece of real estate that's got more debt on it than it's worth. The second thing is the debt. In the government's eyes, even if you only owe 25% on that and you donate it away, the government looks at this as the church is providing benefit to the donor because the church is getting the donor out of debt, and that's a no-no. That's an excess benefit transaction that can't happen. But non-cash gifts are really fun. I mean, they're fun to ask for in the church. If you're just in the church and raising money for something, say, hey, think about doing this. As a pastor, I have 5 daughters, and I had my daughters at a yard sale one time, and this lady was selling jewelry. And I was looking around on it. I could see that there was a really nice gold ring in the jewelry, and the jewelry was all 25 cents a piece. And I thought, hey, well, my kids all pick a ring and see if any of them pick the gold ring. Well, they all picked the junk. None of them picked this. So I said, well, then I think Daddy's going to buy a ring too. You know, so I got a gold ring for a quarter. And then in preaching on generosity, I was talking about this ring and, you know, the values and it, and what's things worth in God's eyes. What does God see that other people? And I said, I'm just going to give this ring to the first woman that it fits. And so I start walking down the aisle. It wouldn't fit anybody. And I had these people that were ex-Salvation Army people and looked almost Amish, you know, no jewelry, nothing, anything like this. It fit her ring perfectly. And she was just as excited as she could be that this fit her ring, fit her finger. And so so she took it, and then she went home with it from that thing. And then she got to feeling guilty about being gaudy. And yeah, so about a month later, after she'd worn it for a month, the ring's in the offering again. So we give it away, and it made its way into the offering plate through several families in the church. It was just it was a really fun experience, and it was all centered around on this giving something away, you know, giving something away that you have. Here's my gift of real estate that we jumped the gun on just a little bit, the level one EPA evaluation. Yeah. So, but there are a couple things on here that we forgot, like we did the title search and EPA, level one EPA evaluation, but the no prearranged sales. If somebody wants to give a piece of real estate away and you want your brother to buy it, and you make a sales agreement that my brother's going to buy it for this much money, you've negated the charitable deduction in the sale. So there can't be any prearranged sales. There is, however, a buyer in the wings option, which is a way around it that we've used sometimes. And I already mentioned the UBIT tax, the appraisals of the donor's responsibility, and the forms 8283. We did those off of our head without even looking at the slide, didn't we? Split interest gifts. I spent just a little bit of time on charitable remainder trust and charitable gift annuities and the life estate reserve. We didn't talk about the charitable lead trust, but these were all gifts that when given away, they pay back the donor. They're not 100% donation. They are the combo gifts, and we really excel in these. So at the foundation, these are the ones you want to be paying attention to working with us. It takes a special donor, special circumstance in each one of these, but it can be a way for a donor to have income or have benefit from the charitable deduction that are legal. And that's probably as deep as we need to go into those at this point. This receding for non-cash gifts. So when I said the $5,000 limit, there's different substantiation levels, and this is complicated. In fact, I do this all the time, but I still go back and read the rules all the time. Okay, what's the difference between the substantiation of a non-cash gift of $250 to $500 to $500 to $1,000, all those things. Sometimes the donor just doesn't care. They just want to make a donation. My very first church, very generous man, mowed our churchyard. He drove his lawnmower about a mile, drove it up the road, mowed the churchyard, drove it back. And he was wearing his Cub Cadet out doing that, so he decided to buy a new lawnmower and give the old one to the church. It's a good thing to do. Until the Lord started speaking to him. He did. The Lord said, you should give the new lawnmower to the church. So he swapped them back and forth, came back, gave the new one to the church, kept the old one for himself. He wasn't a bit concerned about any kind of charitable deduction or anything that was happening on that. Titled vehicles, since we mentioned those, we do handle those, but I will have to tell you, we don't go out of our way to try to handle them very often. There are organizations that we use in other parts of the country. We had a call the other day about a car in Seattle that somebody wanted to give, and I said, what we would do is we'd either use a local Seattle nonprofit, or we're just going to call it up and have somebody drive it to an auction and let it go right away. But there's a lot involved. If the church actually receives the title to the vehicle, first of all, you're going to have to go down to the title office and get the thing done. You're going to need to have liability insurance on it. You're going to have to go through the whole process just as if they were buying it. But the substantiation is different. Nearly every charitable receipt that a church gives for a non-cash item is due the earlier of the due date of the taxes or the date that the, it's when the taxes are due or when the taxes are...
90 days or the taxes due.
Of the next year.
The date of gift within 90 days or the taxes are due.
So the cars, however, are different. It's 30 days. And that's an easy one to break, because when you're trying to get a car and you're working on the title and getting under insurance and stuff, it's easy to forget to do that. It also takes a totally different form, because on the substantiation of any of these other kind of gifts, you write it out on church stationery and say, this is we received a picnic table from this individual. Yeah, kind of, but it's actually a government Ford called a 1098C. for a car, it's a very different thing. And then you have to inform the government of the sale price of that as well. So cars are a little bit more difficult to handle. The nonprofits that specialize in this are a little expensive. They can be 10-20% or whatever, you know, or like $1,500 or 10%, whichever is more, or something like that. But it is not the easiest process in the world to do. So you can call us for advice on that, and if you twist our arm, we'll handle it for you. Okay?
They're very time-consuming, and the profit margin is just not there. I mean,
so.
But if somebody says, hey, I've got a 40,000-mile car, and I want the church to have it so that they can do hospital visits and stuff like that.
That's a much better deal.
That's a much better
deal. Yeah.
But if it's kind of a turn it and burn it, yeah, and try to get as much as you can from the car, those are not necessarily. But if there's a nice vehicle that somebody's just, my mother's not driving anymore and she has 15,000 miles on this car, mm-hmm, or her old van, and yeah, the church, you know, will take that.
So when I've worked with these donors in these kind of situations, there's not usually a lot of tax benefit for donating a car, because you get a lower limit than you would if you sold it and got the cash, unless it's been involved in a business. Let's say it's the farmer's pickup truck and they depreciated it, then giving it away makes tax sense. For most people in their car, there's no difference between selling the car and giving the cash. That's actually a higher limit of deduction then than it is to sell the car. What I find is somebody's got a car, they don't know what to do with it. They don't want to sell it to a friend or family because they're worried the brakes will go out, and they'll feel guilty about that. They just don't want to go through the hassle and don't know how to do this. So I go back to the pastor and I say, there's no tax benefit in giving the car. It's going to be a lot of transferring titles and so forth. Let's volunteer to help this individual sell this car. Then, I mean, even if you just drive it to CarMax for them, it's like, oh, wow, you can do that? I didn't know we could do that. You know, that's really cool. We can do that, or send it to an auction. Help them sell the car. Just give them a little bit of help, and then they can donate the cash if they want to. More non-cash considerations. Appreciated assets versus depreciated. So if somebody has an appreciated asset, then or one that they've depreciated where their cost basis and their current value is separated, that's the ones that really make sense to give away. If you lost money in the stock market, sell it, take your loss, and give the cash away if you want to. We mentioned that the non-cash deduction limit is lower, typically 30% rather than the 60% for cash. Audit risk, how are we doing time-wise? Oh, I'll have to hurry. I got 9 minutes left.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm on my last slide. So the audit risk, anybody just needs to know that, especially if you're doing something really odd out there. A piece of, let's say you have $250,000 painting and you want to donate it to your church, and you want them to be able to display it for 10 years. You have a really complicated one there that is. Those kind of things are going to kick out an audit risk. And then I would say that payable on death is really easy. So if you want to do a deed or a title on a car or a bank account or an IRA account or anything like that, if you want to make a donation for that upon your death, that's like the easiest gift there is out there. It's very easy for the church to receive those as well. Other than the IRA, will cost them a lot of phone calls. Yeah, it's easy. It's typically the easiest thing in the world. I had a complicated one with U.S. Bank. Yeah. It took about 4 or 5 trips into the U.S. Bank in Olathe, Kansas, Roger.
Really?
Yeah, to actually get a very simple account.
Bank of America has been my nemesis.
Christians typically like to hang on to their money as long as possible.
That's true. It's true. So we Roger and I have been doing this for a while. You'll talk to some generous person and they're looking at their $3 million in their IRA or whatever, you know, and they got this other thing, and their financial advisor really wants to keep that money. So I don't know if you can afford to give that away or not. You might want to hold on that for a while.
I was working with a lady in Mississippi one time, and she never married, and she had lost her eyesight earlier in life, and she had an attorney that was, let's just say, protective of his client, and he was about 88 to 90, and she had $800,000 of CDs, and she wanted everything to go.